In 1877, the earth moved with the power of a footballing giant, and the world was introduced to the beautiful game.
People might yet win it here for Wolves. Blasting the shot. What a goal! Fully the hero again.
And a podcast is following the giant in its bid for glory at the top of what it created all those years ago. This is the 77 Club.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
It's time for today's Lucky Land horoscope with Victoria Cash.
Life's gotten mundane, so shake up the daily routine and be adventurous with a trip to Lucky Land. You know what they say, your chance to win starts with a spin. So go to LuckyLandSlots.com to play over 100 social casino-style games for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Get lucky today at LuckyLandSlots.com.
Available to players in the U.S., excluding Washington and Michigan. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void or prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
It's time for today's Lucky Land horoscope with Victoria Cash.
Life's gotten mundane, so shake up the daily routine and be adventurous with a trip to Lucky Land. You know what they say, your chance to win starts with a spin. So go to LuckyLandSlots.com to play over 100 social casino-style games for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Get lucky today at LuckyLandSlots.com.
Available to players in the U.S., excluding Washington and Michigan. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Hello and welcome to episode 263 of the 77 Club. Harry, start with the socials.
Yes, the Wolves 77 Club on Facebook and Instagram, at 77 Club Podcast on X. And we're on Spotify and Apple. Please rate us.
Dan Bayliss is here.
Hello.
And Jack Williams.
All right.
Harry, Nottingham Forest away. I'd normally start with you. Going to go straight to the boys that were at the game. Bayliss, I want to start with the first question. I saw a Nottingham Forest podcast and they were talking about how it's getting quite expensive to go to City Ground. It's quite expensive once you're in it and it's basically falling apart and the plumbing's really bad. What was your experience of the City Ground?
Their bar service wasn't very good.
Used to it.
It is quite an old ground. It's knocking on now, isn't it? And it's an absolute mission of a walk. But yeah. What was it, £6.50 a pint in there for some flat beer?
Don't know. I sent you to the bar, mate. Sat that round out.
Yeah. Jack did not go to the bar.
Well, just at least I missed the Gibbs White goal. So that was the silver lining of having to buy a round. Yeah, it is a bit of a tumble down. I didn't really think about it, but it is a bit getting towards the end of its life sort of thing. But it's all right. It's like the Steve Buller a little bit, except there's a big Perspex screen in front of where you get your beer from, which was really off-putting.
That's strange. Jack, did you have to sit out around because you were too drunk? Because you sent through, I think, around the 8.15 mark of train beers. Was this self-induced or was it just you being lazy?
That's just me being lazy. You know that I don't think I've been to the bar since 2009. And it's not going to change for a football round at half time, really, particularly in unknown territory where I can't rely on the bar service. So, Dan toddled off to do that about a few minutes before half time. And he was quite lucky, actually, because he did miss Gibbs White's equaliser and his knobhead celebration, I suppose. Looking at the game as a whole, it was quite entertaining from a neutral's point of view. I thought even when we went 2-1 down, we were still in it. And I said to Dan, actually, I thought we were going to win it. And when we got it back to 2-2, I thought, all right, this is it now. I bet we kick on because very end-to-end. But overall, I think 2-2, we can't really argue with that being a fair result. I mean, Forest had some very good spells, looked dangerous. But, you know, there's positives to take from us as well, really. And the first of those being just the look around when Cunha beat two men and put that ball in the top corner. We were like, bloody hell. That was at the opposite end of the Wolves fans. But even from there, we were like, bloody hell, that's a goal, that is. And then watching it back, you can tell it really was. So, you know, it just says really how much we've been missing him and, you know, players like him when it comes to creating chances and scoring goals, because that first one, he created that really on his own, going nowhere, out of very little, and put us 1-0 up. And from that point, I thought it was going to be our day. But it's just annoying then when we score not long before half time to switch off and let in a goal from a corner, really, which goes through God knows how many players on the way and then gets their tails up right before half time. The Gibbs White factor comes in because obviously he celebrates like, you know, like you'd expect him to, right in front of the Wolves fans. And then Forest, I think, had their tails up then going into the second half. But it's game of fine margins, isn't it, really? But, you know, it was an entertaining day. And the point for us with, you know, it does more harm to Forest than it does to us, really, because Forest have got it all to play for. And really looking at us, our season is, you know, kind of, you know, petered out, unfortunately, hasn't it? So we haven't got that much to play for. But it's a point on the road, really. Even still, I know we've got Cunha back, but he can't play a full 90 yet. And we're still bringing on kids towards the end. So overall, I think, you know, on the balance of play and everything, like, not too disappointed with it. And, you know, it's a game we could have easily lost, but it's a shame, particularly when we got ourselves in front from such a wonder goal, that we just go to sleep so quickly after.
Harry, do you agree with what Jack says? I mean, obviously, it's disappointing to draw. I think I'd agree with that. But how much is a talisman is Cunha? Because I think it's probably, I can't really think of a player that has had such a, we'll call it a slow burn, because obviously he's coming from, you know, the European leagues into the Premier League, and it's taken him a little time to find his feet. And we thought in the beginning, was he really worth the money? You sort of look at the Neves transfer and the Football Manager, and you goes, well, that Neves transfer pays for Cunha. But how impressed have you been that, you know, he's been out for, was it 9 games, and then just comes in and does that?
Yeah, and I thought he struggled when he come on against West Ham. But yeah, he was brilliant against Forest, and like Jack said, that first goal was out of nowhere, and I think that's my favourite goal he's scored so far. And just on, if you go back to when he first come in, if you go back, ironically, go back to that Forest League Cup game where we lost on penalties, in that game he mocked Gibbs White's celebration, made him look stupid, and he did it again. And that's when I first thought, yeah, I really like him. And he weren't really playing that well then, if you remember. He hadn't really found his feet under Lopetegui. But now he's like our main man, isn't he? And if it wasn't for him, we don't get anything out of that game. And that first goal was just world class. There's no other way to say it. I mean, he gets thrown to him inside his own half. He runs the length of the pitch inside. And his celebration as well was brilliant. Up to the corner flag, tapping on it, like just going, what? So he's just a character. He's a great, great character, great bloke. And also, just on Cunha, because it's kind of the same sort of thing, is seeing Hwang come on, I thought was good. I thought he did okay when he came on as well. A bit frustrating because obviously he's just come back. He could have done a bit better at times, I thought, but he looked lively. He looked up for it. He looked, you know, fitter than I thought he would be. And with us naming 2 goalkeepers on the bench, we've still got our issues, haven't we, with the squad. But to have Cunha and to have Hwang back and to put a bit of fight in and get that result. And yeah, I'd have hated if we'd have lost because, as you know, Gibbs White, his celebration was I mean, Jack and Bayliss were in the away, and so they probably know what the Wolves fans were singing to him, but he's done it to himself. You know, he's alienated the Wolves fans from the word go. Even when he was at the club with his girlfriend, as we all know, she didn't help him at all. And it's all stemmed from there, really. And there's no love lost between him and the Wolves fans. And I think he's a fantastic player. I think he's one of the best players on the pitch on the day, but I just really don't like him as a person. I think he's very arrogant. And Cunha, thankfully, made him look a tit again by mocking his celebration when he equalised.
And I can hear many, many voices who will be listening to this and going, Cunha's best goal is easily the one against Albion, and there's no contest, just because it was against them. Also, that celebration, the Premier League did a podcast with him, and they do something called the 5-second rule, and I think it's the tapping the buzzer is something you have to do, obviously, within 5 seconds. And she said to him, next time you score, make sure you do that celebration. And that's where the tapping of the flag came from.
Brilliant.
Dan, let's move on to Morgan Gibbs-White. We're going from a player who has a lot of class in Cunha to somebody who seemingly doesn't have any, maybe a little bit of a chip on his shoulder. But I think a lot of people, and I agree with the comments that have said, you know, the Wolves made him, gave him his early professional career, actually under Nuno, who's obviously at Forest now. But what was your reaction? I know you weren't in the ground to see it, but obviously you were there and would have been chanting along with the songs in the reaction to the goal.
Just remind us what the songs were, Dan. I can't remember what they say.
I think I'll save us getting cancelled.
That's for you. It's a risk I'm willing to take.
Look, it's twofold, right? He fell out with the manager and didn't get what he wanted, so he left the club. But the fans didn't take it well at the same time, and stuff happened off the pitch. So he had a choice to either go into his shell and take the booze or respond to it, and he's responded to it, and he's now got to live with that. So a part of me sort of says, I'd rather a player do that than not. If we had it the other way around, we'd probably quite enjoy it. So there's a little bit of it. I think on the whole, like he played pretty well, to be fair. And Forest created some very good chances. It's just that Wolves had good spells and they just came at the right time. And I thought, too, well, we were going to nick it. You could just see it coming, but just didn't really happen. The game sort of petered out for the last 5 minutes.
I kind of think that I've thought about this quite a bit, actually. And I'm wondering, like, why has the relationship broken down so much? Because he's had some good games for us. You could see there was definitely a player in there, very young, very, very raw at times. But you think back to like when he played for us under Nuno at home to Chelsea and those sorts of performances where he sort of came in from the fringes, you know, quality, lots of things there and lots of talent there. And you kind of have to think, like, fair play, if he wants to be guaranteed to play first team football every week and he wants to move, then, you know, fair play to him because that's the way he's going to progress in his career when he's younger. So moving to Forest, I think we're all happy. We were very happy with the fee we got for it. So, you know, everyone's quite happy about that. Yeah, I just wonder...
Points on the back of it.
Yeah, it's cost him a few points, definitely. So you wonder, like, why is the relationship so bad? And I keep thinking back to it and I think his girlfriend really hasn't helped the situation. I think a lot of it has come down to that. And just, I don't know what it is. Obviously, she's, you know, a wannabe glamour model or something. And some of her posts on social media just rub people up the wrong way. And from that point, it's very hard to kind of claw yourself back. And obviously, he's got to stand by his girlfriend and all this sort of stuff. So, you know, fair play to him. But yeah, I don't think she's helped the relationship at all and made it a bit more sour than it would have been. If no one knew who his girlfriend was, then... This wouldn't be happening. You might get some abuse, but it wouldn't have stirred the pot as much. But I think it's kind of, for some reason, it's just sort of connected and resonated with our fans that it's kind of just like, not just him, it's the two of them as a pair. Mm-hmm. And people are not really taking to her. But also I think he's a bit silly for, I know he's done that celebration, which we think about, it was in a League Cup game, wasn't it, for God's sake? It didn't really matter in the grand scheme of things, but it's a bit silly for him to celebrate like that in front of the Wolves fans when you've just scored an equaliser in a game that you really need to win and you end up not winning. Do it at the end if you're going to do it. Do it at the end when you've won 3-1 or 3-2 or whatever. So, well, yeah.
Apparently.
Well, we're going to talk about VAR, are we? But yeah, it's a weird one because I'd imagine there's players who've probably done more for us and maybe people don't like as much the individual player, but doesn't have this just stirring pot of hatred. And I think it's just everything. It's all, you know, the girlfriend, the social media and everything just combined.
To stick up for I'd never thought I'd say this, but to stick up for her a little bit, she's from South Africa. And so when she first met him, she was very young. And I don't think she really got how much it meant and how tribal football is in England. I think she was very naive. So she would tweet out all this rubbish about fans criticising him or whatever. It weren't just at Wolves. I remember when he was at Swansea, a lot of their fans got annoyed with her as well. She was a bit too open and a bit too honest and a bit... I mean, she was just defending her boyfriend, wasn't she? But some of the things she said and the way she went about it really riled the Wolves fans up. And if you notice now, she just don't put anything. I think she's learned her lesson a bit, or he said to her, don't put anything. But I agree with you, Jack. If she wasn't in the picture or she didn't tweet or she weren't as out there as much trying to be the next Molly May or whatever she's trying to do, I don't think it would be as bad. I think he'd get booed a little bit, but he wouldn't be doing all the ears and all that. Yeah, that's definitely stemmed from her. But, you know, I think some of the chants are a bit brutal from the Wolves fans. But, you know, maybe he's in his right to do his celebrations if he's getting abused that much. But I remember Leeds away, first game under Bruno Lage. His dad was fighting with Wolves fans in the away. And just before he moved to Forest, he actually played. He started that game. So even, you know, it's really it's really toxic, the relationship between him and the Wolves fans. Especially, I mean, if you found out your dad's having a fight with a Wolves fan in the away end, you're going to take a dislike to the Wolves fans, aren't you? I don't know why I'm sticking up for him, but yeah, there is reasons behind what's going on, but he should probably take the high road and not keep doing it, if you know what I mean. Just score a goal, run off, and maybe don't do that.
Dan won't correct me here, but I don't remember at the game there being that. The chanting started until after the celebration, or did it? I can't really remember.
No, it was all after.
So he's chose to roll us up there, and then obviously it's, yeah, just not. But being a player who used to play for you is pretty standard. It's not just gives wide. It happens all over the shop, even sometimes when it probably is unjustified. But, you know, it's just trying to get in people's heads, isn't it? But I don't think the really, you know, you could call it out of order chanting, if you like. I mean, it wasn't that bad, but chanting started until after he riled the Wolves fans up, and after that it's fair game, isn't it? As far as I'm concerned,
it's all about the sort of football banter type atmosphere of him doing it against his former club, sort of thing. What he's done has worked. He's a little bit rent free in some Wolves fans' heads. Like, we've just spent 6-7 minutes talking about him, so
he's more than rent free.
I don't like him. I think he is an arrogant git, but it is a little bit funny.
Who do you think Molly May has done?
I have no idea.
Rod Stewart sang a song about her. Is that what you're
going to go down? I haven't got a clue. I'm going to have to Google.
Conservative peer from 1964.
I haven't got a clue.
She's Tommy Fury's sparring partner, Bayliss. They spar together, boxing.
Health spar.
Oh, is that who that...
Yeah.
Oh,
Love Island, yeah.
Okay. I do sort of know who it is.
There you go.
Go back to
Harry,
the wireless now.
Was it good to see Hwang back on the pitch?
Yeah, as I mentioned earlier, I thought he looked... There was a few moments where he could have done better. He dived on the one, didn't he, trying to get a penalty, but he got in a few good positions. Looked pretty sharp, considering. And yeah, it was good to see Guano Fraser come on as well. But just to flip it a bit, he's just come back to me. Before we scored, can you remember Gomez's chance when they cleared off the line with a header? Mm-hmm. And then Sarabia, got to bring him up, misses from 8 yards out. And again... I don't know how many games in a row now. He's so frustrating, the bloke. I mean, I'm going to sound like a broken record, so I always say it. Technically on the ball, fantastic player. So skillful, great delivery. But when he ain't on it, because he ain't got the pace or much strength, he's just useless. If he's just not on it, if he ain't like pinging really good crosses or putting through balls through, he might as well not be on the pitch. He's a waste of space. And to put that wide of the post at 0-0 was criminal. A professional footballer from 8 yards out there in pretty much an open goal has got to score that, in my opinion. And I know a lot of people love him, but I'm not a fan. I'm not a fan of Sarabia. I think he slows us down a lot.
I think I'll say it again. You know, I think he's a luxury player. I think he's a player. He's a nice to have, but I don't think he's going to drag you into games or out the shit. I don't know how you feel about him, Jack.
I get it. I understand it, but at the same time, I have a little bit more patience because some of the stuff I've seen people saying about him, you know, in the last week or couple of weeks, I think is a little bit unfair because at some points this season, he's really dragged us out of it. And I think people have got short memories because we've had very few people there available. And he's had some good games for us this season and actually really dug in. And the one thing I do like about him, and I think this is probably obviously me being a bit blinded by his likability, is like against West Ham last week, how he was like arguing with the ref at the end of the game. He's like a little rat just niggling away at them. He's like a little sarky prick. And I really like
him.
He went at Gibbs White.
Did you think Gibbs White was shushing him? Did you see that? Gibbs White ran up to Strabble's face and went shh in his face after he scored. Like, yeah. So yeah, I can see what you mean by that, actually. Yeah, he must have been winding Gibbs White up as well.
I think he's a proper wind-up merchant and a right, sarcastic. He's like I think he was French if he wasn't Spanish. He's one of them. I think he just, like, knows how to wind people up and he's just very sarcastic in people's faces and just makes these great facial expressions, which kind of makes me like him. But I agree, he's hit and miss. Sometimes you don't know he's on the pitch and sometimes he has moments of brilliance and he is a luxury player. But I think he's been an asset to us this season on the whole, particularly when we really needed him. So I'm not ready to jump on the Sarabia's useless bandwagon yet.
I think the way we set up Saturday, it didn't let the wingers get forward. We were quite narrow and you can see why he was getting some stick a couple of times. We had space down either side and Wolves wouldn't go. And when we're sort of playing at our best, that's where we really dominate teams. It's where the second goal came from. Because we've been trying to get down that wing and that's what won the foul.
Doherty, I thought he was shocking. He was like you mentioned about not getting down the wings. He didn't do that for their second goal. Sorry, because you've just brought it up. I think it was I can't remember if it was Santi Bueno or I think it was Kilman actually heads the ball away really poorly to Lamina. Lamina just throws his arms up in a strop, and then Doherty kind of like comes in, does a little 1-2 with Gibbs White, tries to tackle him, and then it just falls to Danilo. So it was like a calamity of errors for their second. It was our fault completely, yeah. Like another error. So people said in the comments that, like, I think Stephen Morley earlier said, does the amount of goals we're conceding now concern you? And it does a bit, actually, because we do always just seem to get out of jail there. But our defence, since we've been at Dawson, we have had a few calamity of errors of just like doing it to ourselves, like against West Ham. In the build-up to their handball, we did that to ourselves. So, yeah, but I thought Doc was terrible. I was so happy when he went off. But at the same time, I was slagging off Hugo Bueno the other week. So both of those two at the moment for me are not playing very well in that left wing-back position.
You've just reminded me of something, Harry, and I remember this at the time because you mentioned Lamina then, and I don't think you guys will have seen this on the telly. I don't know if you noticed it either, Dan. I think I might have said to you what happened, but he was definitely in a little bit of a strop towards the end of the game. So, you know what always happens when we bring subs on? They bring a little bit of paper, don't they? A little bit of paper with some instructions. Yeah. And what happened was, I think it was when Fraser came on. I don't know if it was Fraser or if it was the other guy who gave him the bit of paper. Ran over to him, gave him the bit of paper, didn't even look at it, and he threw it straight into the crowd. He threw it straight into the Forest fans. He was just pissed off to even be given it. Grabbed it and then just lobbed it straight away into the fans. I was like, well, he's not a happy bunny if he's something, but whatever it said in the paper, he wasn't. Yeah, there was something going on there, whether he was annoyed about the subs, whether he's annoyed about his own performance, but he just did not want to know what the instructions were. He just like basically told off who was giving it to him and just threw it in the crowd. But the cameras, I don't think, would have picked that up. But
no, so, I didn't see that.
Yeah.
Did see that.
No, I didn't see that. Wow. Interesting.
A bit stroppy lately, isn't he? He's underperforming a bit lately as well, but again, he's been one of our players of the season, so, you know, he can have a few bad games.
Very true. Was there a man in the match there, Harry, player of the match?
There's only one man of the match, isn't there, Cunha, the main man. He by a mile from our team, from our point of view, and just for the celebration alone, mocking Gibbs White, yeah. Oh, but I can't even really think of anyone else who... There weren't many other standouts, was there, apart from Cunha? Defensive, like we said, I thought Toti Gomez... Yeah, Sarr again, to be fair. Yeah, Toti Gomez made a really good block first half at 0-0, put his body on the line. But yeah, we were shaky at the back. But yeah, it's got to be Cunha, no brainer.
Clean sweep of Cunha's, everybody?
It's the easiest pick, isn't it, for a man in the match call we're going to have, really. Two goals, one goal.
He filled the void for Aitnori, didn't he? It'd have been nice to have Aitnori and him. I think we'd have won. But yeah. one-man team again, weren't we? We're a one-man team.
Yeah. Okay, let's move on to Arsenal now, who, in Dan's word, was bottling the league. Harry, we were talking about it just before we came on air, and our record against Arsenal isn't brilliant. First question is, how are you feeling about this one? And secondly, you'll have to forgive me, because the girlfriend has locked herself outside during the podcast, and I would normally let her stay there, but it is getting dark. So
you're going to let Harry, but Harry has to stay outside or not? Is that the rule?
Yeah, well,
I'll answer the question. How am I feeling? Go on, Sam. Run and open the door. Yeah, so how am I feeling? Well, I'm not feeling good, because I feel like Jack said earlier, I think our season's over. So we're kind of just playing now just to try and ruin Arsenal's title hopes. And at the time of recording, they're playing in the Champions League. So maybe that's a bit of a bonus for us. Knacker them out a bit. They have lost against Villa. And hopefully we can just play well and spoil their party even more, because I'd absolutely love to be the team that stops them winning the title. It'd be brilliant. And that's all we've got to play for now, really, isn't it? It's to spoil Arsenal's title hopes, try and stop City. And we've also got Liverpool last game. So we've got quite a huge role in the title race. But our season, personally, unless some miracle happens, is pretty much over. But we're just playing for pride now, I guess.
That's really interesting, Harry. Dan, could you say something that Harry didn't say, because I wasn't here?
Yeah, it's a bit of a strange one. They're on a wobble, Arsenal, and they do it, don't they, every season. So it'd be nice to catch them whilst they're wobbling. But I don't know, I'm sort of at 50-50 with it. I feel like Wolves could put a performance together pretty soon, because we've had spells of looking quite good, but we have just have another personnel to back it up. On the other flip side, Arsenal need a reaction, and we might be the whipping boys that get the reaction. So
You covered all bases there. Nicely done.
I was just checking the Champions League scores then, because obviously the games are going on at the same time. So what happens to them against Bayern Munich tonight, you know, might make or break them really and change what happens on Saturday. But
Harry, starting 11, do you think there's room for Hwang to come into it? Do you think maybe Dawson is worth a shout, looking a bit shaky in defence, leaking goals, if he is fit?
Yeah, it's a strange one with Dawson, because every game I keep thinking he's going to start and he doesn't. He's just on the bench. And I saw a quote from Gary O'Neill say he could only last about 10 minutes if he did play. So I don't know what injury he's still carrying or what's wrong with him. But if Dawson is fit, I would personally bring him in sooner rather than later, just because, like I said, I like Santi Bueno, but it's been a little bit shaky in recent times at the back, it must be said. Hopefully Aitnor is back, because he nearly made the squad, didn't he, for Forest? It was a last-minute decision not to put him in the squad at all. So to have Aitnori and Cunha on the pitch would be absolutely brilliant. You would assume it would be Sarabia up there with him. But yeah, I wouldn't start Doherty after that performance. I thought he was horrendously bad. So maybe give Hugo Bueno the nod. Or he might put Aitnori back at left wing back now with... got Cunha and Hwang back. You might start Hwang and Cunha. It'd be not. I'd love to see Hwang, Cunha, and Aitnori as the three up there, and drop Sarabia. And that's harsh, but I've just said what I think of him, so that's why I'd love to see it. It won't happen, but I'd love to see it. And yeah, pretty much the rest picks itself. It'd be the 5-2-3. You sort of imagine. You've got to assume it'd be Gomez and Lamina in midfield. Don't think Tommy Doyle will be in there, and hopefully Lamina's not throwing instructions about late on in the game. Hopefully he's cheering.
No, that's really, really balmy, that is. Still can't really understand that. Although a lot has happened to him personally this season, so you never know when that sort of stuff.
It was just frustration. I mean, from my point of view, when it happened, so as we said, I know we're talking about squad depth, and I've talked about it every week, but I do honestly think it's killed us this season, and we could have had some really great moments. One of those being Saturday, actually. We wouldn't have to play bloody Arsenal, would we? We'd be playing in a cup semi-final, but... Not that I can't keep thinking about it, but I can. So, yeah, with Lamina, I think at the point, it frustrated me a little bit on Saturday that, like, once Traore and Fraser and everybody was on the pitch, you just knew that we weren't really going to create very much, and we were settling for 2-2 at best, really. And that was the frustration I felt at that time. So maybe that's what Lamina felt like as well, really, because arguably that game would have been there for the winning if we'd have, you know, had players to bring on who could change a game, but it's the same story every week, in it. But Arsenal, free hit. I'd really like us to put a dent in their title hopes. I know Villa did a hell of a damage to that on the weekend, which, you know, it's bittersweet, isn't it? It's one of them. But just ever since that trouble we had against Arsenal coming out their ground a few years ago, Harry, it's just really put me off them, man. It's all just tourists or wannabe roadmen, and I just can't be arsed with them. So I don't want to win the league.
Big news in the comments. I didn't know that. At least in the comments last year.
Yeah, so Steve, and I feel like we're missing another variation of the word Stephen or the name Stephen to complete the set there. But Steve says, I think Dawson needs an op. Stephen says, I believe Gary Neil mentioned Dawson requires groin surgery. But it's just annoying when on the bench. So it's almost like I would prefer
somebody
else
to
be on. Yeah, so that's...
I mean, the season's done now, isn't it? So just let him have the op now so he's back fresh for next season, in my opinion. Like, that'd be better.
Just concede loads of goals without him. Don't matter.
Score prediction, Dan.
Damp squib. 2-0 loss.
2-0 loss. Harry.
I don't know. I've got... It's one of them I'm not hugely confident, but I'm not down in the dumps about it either. I think we might sneak a draw. You know, I'm going to go for a 1-1.
Jack.
3-1 defeat.
3-1 defeat. Oh, God. Harry. No, I think it's probably a defeat on the cards. It's a late kickoff as well, isn't it? So that always seems to change the dynamic a little bit. Bayliss, how's your betting odds?
If my phone works, which it wasn't a second ago. I'll go with the sensible one first that I sort of fancy a little bit. So Cunha to score any time. Each team to have 4 or more corners. And João Gomes to make 4 or more tackles, 11-1, which, considering you only really need a goal there, it's pretty decent odds.
I like that, yeah.
I'll show you how nuts the betting odds are for this game. So 1-0 Wolves, Hwang Yi-chan to score the goal, 120-1.
Wow, we're big underdogs there.
1-1 draw, João Gomes, no, he hasn't scored many, but to get the goal, 240-1. Bukayo Saka first goal, Arsenal 4-0, 45-1.
Oh my God, we're massive underdogs.
Well, you never know with Joao Gomez. He likes scoring against teams from North London.
It's always weird for betting when you get to the end of the season because teams who have something to play for, who are particularly down the bottom, they always shorten the odds. And teams in the middle with nothing to play for, like, they can be very dangerous because there's no pressure and there's nothing on them. And, you know, sometimes it can work both ways. Sometimes they just don't turn up, like we did against, you know, Brighton under Lopetegui. Or sometimes they can play with no pressure that they just turn into, you know, 2008 Barcelona. So, you know,
Alex,
it's weird. It's hard to price up. Yeah.
Yeah.
Or Wolves versus Liverpool under Lopetegui. the tale of two Lopetegui sides.
Yeah.
Yes, God Struggler says, I despise Arsenal and Liverpool. Would be great to get to 50 points, beat those two and have everybody fit as the season closes. I think that's the dream end to the season, realistically.
Yeah.
And we were sort of talking about the supercomputer a couple of weeks ago, maybe months ago, and they're saying 11th, weren't we? We're still pushing for 7th, and that looks to be the case. Just before we move on to FFP, there was a stat I saw, is on this day, in 1888, the Football League was officially formed. Can we name the founding members?
We're one of them, aren't we?
Correct.
Yeah. Albion. Albion, Preston.
Blackburn, yep. Sheffield United.
Accrington.
Wanderers as well. Were they in there?
Bolton.
Bolton is correct. Accrington is correct.
Bloody hell.
How many is that? Villa.
Seven. Villa is correct.
We said Albion, haven't we?
Notts County.
Notts County
is correct.
Cheers, God Struggler.
Thanks, God Struggler. Is that one more?
Derby County?
Derby County, yes. And I think you've got two more.
Wilson Raiders?
Not Forest.
You want some?
They do play in red and white.
Sunderland? Bristol?
No.
Sheffield?
Wrexham?
No. Up the road.
Sheffield United? Oh, you said that.
Stoke.
Oh,
one more. Okay. Playing blue, and they've never been relegated.
Blues. Everton.
There you go.
That was pretty good, guys.
That was a very, very good. Right. Dan came into his own. Molly May, no idea. Who formed the Football League in 1888? Hold my beer. Oh, I love it. Right, let's talk FFP, and then a couple of transfers, I think, that come into it. Harry, I think this is probably the most that Ryan Aitnori has been linked with clubs. Man City seems to be the club that everybody is saying that talks have opened. Obviously, we take it with a pinch of salt. Do you think his injury record now this season is maybe a little bit like the Neto situation in a way where you think clubs may well be put off by it, or do you think they'll see through that?
No, his injury record isn't too bad, is it? I know he missed out last game, but I think what would more concern them, which hasn't happened this year, to be fair, is in years gone by, I remember Lopetegui fell out of him because of his professionalism. I remember Cody said in one of his Sky Sports interviews he was always late for training and things like that. So if Pep's as strict as you think he is, would it click? But this year, he seems to be loving his football. He's probably one of our most improved players, isn't he, really? He's always been good. He's always had talent and been really good at left back. We know he's always had the skills and easily take a man on. But when he's accidentally fell into this more of attacking role, I think we've kind of found a new beast. A bit like when Bale got put a bit further up for Spurs back in the day and he ended up being like a right forward. We might have found a gem out of nowhere and he might become an absolute monster. So I can understand why a lot of the top clubs want him. He's only 22. That blows my mind. In my head,
it seems like he's only
2 years older than Chirawa. So, like, you know, that just shows how talented and good he is at this young age. And I think he's going to go right to the top. I do. We'll do well to keep hold of him. I'm not surprised there's interest. And it's between him, Neto and Gomez, I think, who we'll sell. And I think it's more likely to be Gomez or Aitnori because of Neto's serious injury. But I'd love to keep Aitnori. He's just a fan. He's so good to watch as well. He's the sort of player you pay to watch, isn't he? He gets you on the edge of your seat. He's entertaining. He reminds me of a sort of lad who just plays on the playground, just does what the hell he wants. Like, he don't know what he's doing to himself half the time, and skillful and whatever. A bit like Traore, when Traore used to come off the bench, he'd get you on the edge of your seat and you get excited. That's like Aitnori every time he gets the ball. So I think he might leave. I'd be gutted if he does, but I think he might go.
Struggler says O'Neill's brought the best out of him. Seems to be a healthy respect for Gary O'Neill from all of our players. Stephen says £60 million would be a decent return for Ryan Aitnori. Well, that seems to be the discussion at the moment. And Sergio Gomez potentially coming the other way. The 23-year-old left back sort of had a youth career across Barcelona, Borussia Dortmund, couple of games for Dortmund in the Bundesliga, a pretty healthy season at Anderlecht, and then moved to City in 2022, played 17 times. So potentially fixes a left-back problem, Jack. I know we don't know much about him. It's coming from a Premier League club. It's coming from the Premier League champions. So, you know, we've got the pedigree there. And, you know, when we take someone like Tommy Doyle, who's obviously hit the ground running, done very well, and it's worked out to be a very, very good swap deal.
You know how I feel about taking top six clubs' cast-offs. It doesn't usually work out. Tommy Doyle is an exception to the rule because he's the sort of player who on loan in the Championship and then was going to be sold at some point. So they'd already decided, you know, years ago that he wasn't going to be, City first team. It's a bit different when it's a big name player who's played for them quite consistently or fairly consistently for Man City to then, you know, take the step down and perform. Like I still struggle to think of an example, bar the likes of maybe, you know, Paul Ince, that sort of era, who've come from a big, massive club.
That's end of career stuff, though, isn't it?
End of career.
And performed. It's end of career stuff, yeah. So
Kevin Middlebrough.
I like the younger players.
Dennis Irwin for a season, but again, it's end of career stuff. But like players in their prime, I honestly think if we want to be pushing the top half of the Premier League, we want players who the big clubs want, not their cast-offs. And I wouldn't swap Aitnori for him, no way. And I agree with the comments. Gary O'Neill has brought the best out of him. I can't believe whatever happened behind the scenes with Lopetegui, I can't believe they couldn't draw a line under it just because he's clearly got pure talent. I agree. He's probably got a bit of an attitude. Maybe he's gone a bit Britney Spears when he shaved all his hair off. Remember that? And he's a bit of a mental character. But, you know, the best talent is often has a bit of a side quirkiness, shall we say. So I'd love to see him today, but I'm not surprised big clubs are looking around him, really. But I hope it's not some bullshit swap deal where we get some player on the fringes of a big six club who hasn't really performed. And then, you know, we're paying them high wages and we only get 15 million quid for Aitnori because that's just not good for anybody.
Yeah. Well, no, I agree. I mean, yeah, the only person I can think of that's made a transition would be Moutinho, but obviously it's not... A different league, he's playing for Monaco. Well, I don't know, we still got 5 years out of him though, Dan. I mean, it's quite a sizable amount of time, half a decade. I mean,
he was at Monaco, though, wasn't he? And Monaco weren't doing that great. So it's like, it's not like coming from like the treble winners or you know, teams properly performing in the Champions League. Monaco were good 10, 15 years ago, but you know, I've had ups and downs, I think, since then. I'm not a massive French football expert, I don't know, but it just worries me. It worries me when they're like, we can get that player off our wage book and also in the process get a player on the cheap. And the big clubs think they have the power to do that because they can draw players in because players want to play for them. But, you know, they probably think, oh, hang on, they've had our absolute pants down with Nunes. Let's screw these boys over. So are they interested?
What do you reckon, Dan? Because you're shaking your head. I think you're probably of the same thinking of
same
as Jack.
Sort of thing as Jack. I sort of think if you're going after young players, you want the ones with something still to prove rather than the ones that have going back down the tiers. You know, he's clearly, if you get to 23, 24 and you're being let go by Man City, you're probably not good enough for him by a good distance. What you tend to find is...
Sorry, did you see everyone crying about Vitinha? Because Vitinha scored, didn't he?
Yeah, he scored yesterday, yeah.
And everyone's saying, oh, why did we let him go? But he wasn't that good for us, was he? Let's be honest. And he was very young at the time. Yeah. And is it Goncalves, the other one? Everyone cries about Goncalves. Yeah. I think he played one League Cup game. But obviously, we are going to let a few young lads go who, one, probably don't want to play in England, and two, just weren't good at the time. Like, we just didn't give them enough. And Nuno, if you remember, weren't really one to give many young people a chance. But Gibbs White, he did a little bit, but not much. But any really young players, he didn't really want to put them in, did he? So it's just annoying that they have gone on to become superstars. But it is what it is, isn't it? They didn't show that sort of talent back then.
it's the way we play. Like coming up as a new Premier League team or newish Premier League team under Nuno, Vitinha isn't going to have the same time on the ball to be able to show that sort of class. You know, he's going to get closed down quickly. He's going to have to track back. And that's why, you know, he shone in Portugal when he went and got picked up by PSG. But it's, you know, he got the luxury of all the players playing around him and the time on the ball that he wouldn't have got playing under us. So fair play to him. You just got to say fair play and just chalk it off because, you know, he probably wouldn't be the player he was now if he stayed. So,
yeah. Remember his goal against Chorley on your birthday?
Exactly. That was the highlight.
Yeah. So you're 30, isn't it? In lockdown.
Yeah, it was.
Yeah, it was.
You celebrated your 30th birthday by watching, we were on bloody Zoom and we all watched the game together.
Yeah,
it was. That's sad, isn't it?
What a strange time. I just wanted to go over some profit sustainability rules because Chelsea's accounts drops at the weekend. So it just shows you, I think, what a complete farce the whole thing is. And I think the Premier League have pretty much been left with their pants down, to be honest, against the hedge fund managers and the venture capitalists, which should we be surprised about it. But BlueCo 22, which is the club's parent company, reported £90.1 million pre-tax loss for 22-23. Under new ownership since May 2022, Chelsea spent over £1 billion on transfers, leading to the second highest wage bill in the Premier League. Can you guess what that is? Their wage bill.
Oh, man.
Per year? Yeah.
300 million?
No.
190?
No, more.
Oh, my God. I don't know. That's ridiculous.
£628 million.
That is too much, but £404 million. It's the second highest wage bill, and I think Man United are probably top of that.
They will be. So
it's crazy, though, but you think, like, we're saying, oh, they spent £1 billion. They spend £500 million a year just on paying them people they've spent £1 billion on. That's how much money they're spending.
No, but it's a billion on transfers, then the wage bill on top of that, and then it's the player amortization charges, which is £203 million, which is basically how transfers are calculated over a period of time. So the revenue was £512 million. So obviously they went out of Champions League, obviously significant losses there, but they have, to be fair, done well on player sales. So I think their key strategy has been selling a lot of youngsters for a lot of money, because then that's put on as total profit. So they got £530 million over 6 years, which is still nowhere near where it would need to be. But this is the genius thing. So they raised £77 million by selling assets like the Millennium and Copthorne hotels to ease it. So you go, okay, they sold the asset, but then they sold it to the parent company, and then the parent company gave them a contract to then run the hotel. So they kept the revenue stream but sold the assets.
Yeah,
which they're all sneaky, aren't they?
It's brilliant, brilliant accountancy. And then there's obviously new rules coming in, which will be squad cost ratio rules to replace the profit and sustainability rules by 2025. So it'll be strict limits on expenditures relative to revenue and player trading profit. So I want to go over to Dan and just... Is there a way out of this for... The people obviously know what they're doing when it comes to moving assets around. And do you think it makes a mockery of the whole system that they're then further down the line going to change the rules anyway?
I personally think from the whole situation is that no one wants to listen to accountants talk, and no one wants to sit in a room full of
it's
interesting. And I get it's a little bit of us to have a 5-minute feature at the end to talk about how stupid it all is, because yes, these investment brands can move their money in particular ways to bend the rules, which is what they do, right? That's why that's what they're there to do. But the crux of it is that the Premier League have gone about it the wrong way, because it's just letting the big clubs do it to greater and greater lengths while the rest of us are, we can't moan, right? We're owned by one of the biggest companies going, so we can't moan. But I don't like the way it's set up to just let it all be written off. If you want a fair playing field, they've got two options. They'd have to cap the amount of money everyone can spend, which I don't think is a good idea. Or you have a draft-based system, which I absolutely detest. Mm-hmm. So what's the real point having it? Mm-hmm. But the Premier League goes from strength to strength. It makes billions and billions in revenue for the Premier League.
It's weird with Chelsea, because they got fined by UEFA, didn't they, a few years ago? And then they had that. Remember, they were doing the 8-year contracts and all that, and they're not allowed to do that anymore. So they, and it's same with City, like you say, Sam. It's just very clever accounting. They have the best in the world, don't they? They hire the best people. And they find weird loopholes, like you just said about buying that, selling that hotel. I think City did something by selling their ground, didn't they?
Like 400 million.
They're all clever, yeah. And they all know the delay tactics. So City have still got all these charges waiting, but they're so good at delaying everything and finding legal loopholes. We won't know the outcome of any of these charges to City for years and years.
We should try and get an expert to come on and have a little chat about it.
We've got one, you, Bayliss.
You just said it was boring. You just said it was boring to talk about it.
I think if we had a genuinely informed view of it for at least a maximum of 3 minutes, it might give us all a better idea of how it happens.
Should we get Jeff on?
Financial wizardry.
The asset thing is just genius, because you think, buy a football club, buy loads of assets, sell them across parent companies and keep the revenue streams within the football club is absolutely genius.
It's the same as...
There'll be different SVPs for all of it. It's nuts.
Didn't City do it? Because I remember all that talk about basically they had the company, they owned the Emirates and they sold their ground to their sister company, counted it as revenue, still own the ground, everything's cool, but they've generated £1 billion to spend. But, you know, we all know all that matters is taking a couple of points off Notts Forest because they were 2 weeks late with a payment. That's what we need to crack down on, lads.
Yeah. And they'll say it's because of, you know, you don't want a bury to happen again, or, you know, the club to be wiped off the face of the earth. I mean, that's what it is. So, I mean, that's the whole sort of prim and proper...
The sad thing is they say they want to do it to stop things like a bury happening. If you ended up with a disgruntled company or owner that have done these loans through whatever vehicle they're doing it through, if that owner decides they want to call the loan, you bust.
So what does happen there? Because wouldn't the owner own the asset through the other company?
Well, this is what happened at Cholton, isn't it? That the guy ended up buying the assets and then held Cholton to ransom, basically, and wouldn't leave because he was owed the money for the assets he owned. And then they struggled to sell the club. So it's horrible.
Incredible. No, we should definitely get somebody on to talk about that. And we'll have a 3-minute conversation. Excellent. Well, best of luck if you are heading up to Molineux at the weekend. 7:30 kickoff. Don't get too drunk. We'll say goodbye to, speaking of which, Harry Mansell.
Bye-bye.
Dan Bayliss.
Goodbye.
And the man that will always give you 3 minutes of pleasure is Jack Williams.
Bye, everybody.
So goodbye from me. Goodbye.
Sports Social Podcast Network.
Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kid's PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18+. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.